Hey, this is Evan Longoria of your San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, April 8, 2019, and this is episode 160 of The TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, today, and joining me as always is Eric Nathanson. What's up, man?
Not much. Just enjoying having all baseball back all the time. It's been like wall-to-wall baseball all week. I'm so happy that we're able to be back watching Giants ball and talking it every week again.
Yeah, I love this time of the year. I mean, opening day is one thing, but being, you know, a couple weeks into the season, you kind of get into that flow. It just feels good. It feels like everything's right in the world.
It's part of the daily routine now, you know?
Exactly. Daily routine for us personally out here in California. The rain has really slowed down. We needed it, but we were kind of getting sick of it. But, you know, yesterday was like 78 degrees. Today is going to be in the 70s again, so it's nice spring weather. It's just, you know, it's nice. It's you know, I'm coaching a baseball team for my son. We got practice today. We had a game this weekend. It's been a good time. I love this time of year, so I'm real happy. But it's not so good if you're a Giants fan. We love baseball and we'll continue to watch this team, but it's been a rough start, hasn't it, Eric?
Yeah, Giants are coming out of, what is this, after 10 games of play, they're 3-7, and this past week they lost 2-3 in LA and then came home for the home opener and lost 2-3 to a good Tampa Bay squad. It was, they've yet to win a series this season, but they've managed to win one game against all three teams so far.
Yeah, like, they haven't won a series, but they haven't been swept.
You know, we were talking just now before the show, they've been competitive. Their pitching is keeping them in every single game. They've been very competitive, but their hitting's just not getting it done. There's no timely hitting going on, and the only games that they have won are when the timely hitting's getting done, or Steven Duggar's in the middle of action. I've kind of tended to notice that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, let's see, they won 6-4 in the second game against Tampa. He drove in three runs. He homered during a loss. Oh, I was thinking about the Dodgers series, and he homered during a loss. So let's start with the Dodgers series. It was a competitive series. The Dodgers have started out absolutely on fire. They have scored something like 30 million runs in the first 11 games. They've hit 20 million home runs so far. Cody Bellinger's hit 7. But the Giants played them tough. They played them competitive. Every single game went down to the wire, you know. What were your takeaways from the Dodgers series? Bumgarner, he got beat, but they were able to win 1 out of 3. You know, they had hope at the end, too, as we're talking about, and Pablo grounded out to end the series. They still put together a decent series in L.A.
It was a good series. You know, the Dodgers came in, and we were talking about this last week, and they had, what, scored 42 runs in the four games against the Diamondbacks. They just looked unstoppable. They had 14 home runs. The Giants had a total of 22 hits going into the series, so they definitely were the premier team in the very short sample size. But they came in, and you know, the Giants won the first game 4-2, and then the Dodgers won 6-5 and 5-3. But the 6-5 game, that was the game where Bumgarner gave up 5 runs, but they were all unearned. Of course, he committed the error himself and gave up a Cody Bellinger grand slam in the inning with 2 outs. So that's, if you guys are confused about unearned runs, it's a very odd thing. So even if you're the pitcher and you commit the error, any runs that would not have scored if you had recorded that out are still unearned, even though you committed the error. So it's a very odd thing.
Let me ask you real quick then, because I see this debate all the time. People always say if a pitcher makes an error, they should be earned runs because he made the error. Personally, I don't think so. Because
no, I'm not. I'm not. I'm not voting for it at all.
Right. I was going to say, I think that's stupid because the moment he releases the ball as a pitcher, he becomes a fielder. So yeah. Any actions he does as a fielder are different than what he does as a pitcher. And I think people get lost in that. I just want to bring that up. I always see that debate go by.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not debating it at all. I just know that I kind of referenced it because of the point you just brought up is a lot of people think, hey, you're the pitcher. Why don't you have those runs charged to you because you made the mistake? But I agree with you. I think once you become a fielder, that's it. Besides, why would you change it anyway now? I mean, rules are rules. So either way it goes, it's like keep it consistent the way it's been the last 100 years. I mean, I don't know why you would change it. But he still gets those other tallies against his record in terms of batting average against and home runs allowed. So those aren't good things to have on your stat sheet either. So that home run does exist on his line. You know, the extra runs, well, you know, the extra hits, I should say, do exist on his line. But point being, if you look at the earned runs of the series, they allowed 5. 2, 1, and 5. So that's a total of 8 runs in 3 games against the Dodgers that they allowed. So the Giants pitching came in and cooled off this team that scored 42 against Arizona. And now they go right back to Colorado, and they're blasting Colorado right now. So the Dodgers have an excellent offense. I don't think there's any question about it. And the Giants pitching cooled them off. And like you just said, they've been in all 10 of their games, all 7 of their losses they've been in. But particularly this Dodgers series was very, very frustrating because that second game where Madison gave up the grand slam and they were down early 5-1, they rallied with 3 runs in the 9th. And they actually had runners on the corners with nobody out. And Joe Panik came up and struck out. And then Panik came up and promptly grounded into a double play to the end of the inning. So, I mean, you know, if you're a normal average major league team, you're going to score the runner from third with nobody out. I looked this up. It's like 81% of the time. It's pretty high, right? Because there's so many ways you can get that runner home. Now, if you're the San Francisco Giants, I think it's down to about 10%. But that's what it feels like.
The numbers don't seem fair. Every time the Giants get a situation like that, I've seen the general reaction is, okay, how are they going to screw this up? Yeah. And generally, they screw it up. Like, I'm trying to be positive watching these games, thinking like, all right, this is the inning. They're going to string a couple hits together. And it's just still not happening, which is why they are losing games that they're competitive in.
Yeah, and so, you know, that was a situation in which they gave up 5 earned runs, and they had the tying run at third with nobody out in the 9th, and they couldn't do it, so they lose. At one ball, you know, Madison makes that play, maybe they win. You know, somehow Panda knocks him in, and they tie, they go to extra innings, or they score later, they win. Who knows? And then, of course, the third game, even though they lost by 2 runs, they also had a bases loaded, nobody out situation in, I think it was the 7th or the 8th, they couldn't score. And then they had 2 runners on with nobody out in the 9th, and they couldn't score. So the Giants are really struggling. They can set the table at times, not saying they're doing it regularly, but when they do set the table, they don't cash in. And it's really hurting them, Eric. I mean, this is bad. It's frustrating to see most of the other teams in the major leagues have, you know, decent stat lines, except for, you know, the Cincinnati Reds are right there with the Giants struggling in offense. So if the Giants had even a remotely close to average offense, like even the bottom 30%, you know, 30th percentile, I think the Giants would be 500 right now.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Like, let's look at some of these batting stats. As a team, they're barely hitting above 200. They're at 208 with a 581 OPS, which are both second to last in the National League.
So bad.
They've only hit 6 home runs in 10 games, which is tied for last with Pittsburgh and Colorado.
So you're saying that Cody Bellinger has more home runs than the entire Giants team?
Wow. Wow. Why didn't I think of that last night when I watched that home run? Wow.
That is not good.
The guy is on fire right now. And they've only hit 23 extra base hits. So in 10 games, they're averaging less than 2.5 extra base hits a game. And it reflects in their 2.5 runs per game. They're getting guys on, like, but they're just not getting them over and getting them in. And it's so hard to watch sometimes because it's just the same formula that 2018 had. It really looks like the exact same team with just a few different parts. Like, Gerardo Parra hasn't really stepped up and done much. Pilar was a nice jolt of action on Saturday. But I mean, then again, he just got here. I mentioned earlier, Duggar has been in the middle of stuff, but like, you know, Longo's disappeared since the Padres series. Posey has only driven the ball a couple times. He finally started to come around, I thought, in this Tampa series. His swing was just not there the first week of the season. Even in the Dodgers series, Posey just did not look right. I mean, if it wasn't for a Bumgarner home run in the game that Bumgarner led up the unearned runs, then the Giants might not have been in it at all.
Yeah. We just don't know. I mean, that's a whole butterfly.
Bumgarner, he's out hitting left fielders. I looked it up. I think the left fielders for the Giants have like two hits or something altogether. I mean, the Connor Joe first hit was like the second hit. It's unbelievable. Left field has become the black hole again. It's crazy.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Longoria, the X-ray, this is the first time he's faced him since he was traded in the Matt Duffy trade. So he went 0 for the entire series. 0 for 5 the first game.
Not step up.
What did he do? 0 for 4 the second game, I think. Yeah, it was bad. And then 0 for 4 again yesterday. He just, I don't know if it was a psychological thing or not, but he definitely did not show up this weekend like many other Giants. But to go back to the Rays series again, every single game was competitive. First game, they lost 5-2. Second game, they won 6-4. And then yesterday, they laid a big egg and didn't score a single run and lost 3-0. So they did have situations in which they could have produced runs, but nothing that I'm going to complain about because they were just thoroughly embarrassed yesterday. But again, the point being is they are competitive in all of these games. They are close. They're not getting blown out. They're just not getting the timely hits to knock them in right now. And it's reflected in their score. So, but, you know, the other thing I have to say is the first three teams they've played, the Padres, the Dodgers, and the Rays, they're all very good teams. And Tampa Bay is just on fire right now. I believe they're leading all of Major League Baseball in ERA. And, you know, they're mashing the ball pretty well, too. So at least... at least there's that little bit of a silver lining along with being competitive. And the fact that their pitching is, what, second, I think you have written here, second in the NL right now?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. The Giants pitching, after facing three very good teams, they're hanging in there. They have a 3.07 team ERA, which is second in the National League behind Pittsburgh. 1.26 whip. The second fewest walks allowed in the NL. And opponents are only averaging 3.6 runs a game. So you take that 3.6 against the 2.5, and it makes sense that the Giants have been in every single game, and it's been competitive. And I just picked this up. The bullpen, the Giants bullpen is the only team that hasn't allowed a home run from the bullpen.
That's interesting.
All the home runs the Giants have allowed, and I don't know how many that is off the top of my head, have been by starters. A Giants reliever has yet to allow a home run. And when you look back on the Saturday game against Tampa, that's the formula the Giants need to win games. Those six runs were the most they've scored in a game this season because they haven't scored a run before the third inning. They only broke out in the fourth inning on Saturday. The sixth inning's their magical inning. They've scored like 8 runs that inning over the course of 10 games. It's just they can't seem to get anything going early. And so when they do get competitive late, it's too little too late.
That's a really good point. I did notice that over the weekend that they have not scored a single run in the first three innings of any game. And so essentially, they've reduced their offense to 6 innings for the first 10 games this year. That's not good. That's not good. So when you get behind early, then it's just fighting and climbing this hill. And they've come close a couple of times to pulling it out of the hat. But like you said, sometimes it's just too little too late. And this anemic offense needs to put a couple on the board in the early parts of the game. It might give them a little bit of confidence, might give their pitching a little bit of confidence and relieve some of the stress that they must be going through right now. But this is what we've felt even when the Giants had a good offense. But you know, where I'm talking like 2010 when Kipe, you know,
Giants
famously
baseball.
Said,
Torture.
Because he was referencing all the close games that they were having. But the difference was the Giants actually put together some timely hits. So they had a lot of one-run games, but they knew how to hit the ball. So, yeah.
That's why the Saturday game is the blueprint they have to follow. That even when they scored some runs and then the bullpen gave up the lead. They actually had the lead 3-2, and the bullpen gave up the lead. But then they came back again and scored runs again later. With I don't remember if it was the Duggar hit and then the belt base hit, Yeah, it was when Bell drove in a couple with a base hit to make it 6-4. That was like the most life we've seen from this team. And some of it was sparked with Pilar laying that bunt down and beating it out and then stealing a bag, and they threw it out into center field. And so we moved up to third base. Yeah, it was such a dirtbag moment. It was such a, like, he ingratiated himself in the fans that day. And it was nice that it came around the kind of way the Giants are going to need to win games, because they're not going to slug the ball. They're just not. They've hit a total of, like we said, 6 home runs, and Belt has 3 of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what they're going to have to do to win games, and that was a nice blueprint. So it was good to see that the Giants can win some of these games, and it's not just going to be rolling over. But when you play 3 quality teams like the Padres, Dodgers, and Rays, you can expect to win 1 of 3 or 1 of 4.
So last week we were talking about Zaidi and how he's just pulling all these strings left and right, and how we both kind of are in agreement with, hey, the old way of doing things and sitting with their veterans or the same old guys clearly was not working anymore. They need fresh blood. They need to find who can answer the call. And we were shocked by seeing a Michael Reed and a Connor Joe in the lineup to start opening day instead of, you know, Mac Williamson or someone we would have expected with the old regime. Well, he just keeps pulling the trigger, man. So since we last recorded, they now have had 2 trades, one of them today. But earlier last week, right before the Dodger series, or during the first game of the Dodger series, they picked up Kevin Pillar, which I think I've always admired him. You know, they call him Superman for his diving ability out in center field. I've always loved watching the highlights on Toronto, you know, highlight packages, but I like this pickup. I like this pickup. I do think it's a little odd that Duggar said, you know, they told him, hey, you're our everyday center fielder, and then a week later he's moving to right. But at the same time, Pilar has that experience, and he clearly showed it with what he did on Saturday. You know, he's not the best offensive player in the world, but look what the Giants have. So he's definitely a step up from a Connor Joe or Michael Reed. And he struggled here out of the gate a little bit. But like you said, he had the bunt, had the stolen base, went to third, had the diving catch with bases loaded. So he's been contributing to this team right away. And by the way, he grew up as a Dodger fan. So he's doing this for the black and orange, which is pretty sweet. But so what did you think of the trade? Because they got rid of Allen Hansen. Yeah, and he was starting, by the way, for first base. Or at first base for the Blue Jays the other night, and apparently he had never played that position in any capacity in his professional career, which was awesome.
I mean, we can call it right now. The Giants won the trade if Allen Hansen is playing first base.
I mean, I think so. I loved Allen Hansen. He had a little pop, and he had some speed, and he had some swagger, but he was not going to be at the same level as a Kevin Pillar. So I didn't mind that trade at all. I think it's a good one. And again, if Zaidi can pull off, it's kind of like death by 1,000 paper cuts is the way I think he's doing it. He's just making very minor upgrades with every single trade. But if he makes enough of these trades, you could look back over a whole season and go, wow, that cumulative total is actually quite a bit in terms of upgrades. So, you know, it's kind of like the guy who goes out and barters, right? He starts with, you know, a matchbook, and he gets a lighter, and somehow he trades for something else and something else and something else. And pretty soon he has a car. It's like, how did that happen? Just incremental bits, you know, here and there. So I respect what he's doing. I know a lot of people are, you know, you listen to KMBR, and I know they take the crazy callers, and the social media, same aspect. It's not maybe your average Giants fan, but they're not very happy with all the trades that he's making. Like, what is this guy? This guy doesn't know what he's doing. He's just pulling at strings. He's desperate. And it's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Do you want to sit with the players that we have right now? Ownership is not giving this guy a lot. So he's trying to make what he can out of this reclamation pile. You know, he's trained in used cars, man. He's doing what he can, and he's proved it in Oakland and LA. So, hey, a lot of action's better than no action as far as I'm concerned.
I agree. I think that is why it seems so drastic to Giants fans, is there was a lot of inaction over the last few years. As far as the guys who helped win championships were rewarded, and then they kind of sat on that. Whereas Zaidi is not afraid to come in here and just push the buttons. He's not afraid to work the fringes at all. And it's when you look at the Dodgers and how they've been built over the last few years, I was looking at their payroll last night. They only have a few high-priced guys as far as Kershaw, Ryu, Jansen, and Turner. And, like, everybody else is pretty much $10 million or under. You know, Bellinger's making, like, $500,000 a year. Muncy's making $500,000 a year. So, you know, Bellinger was drafted, but they found Muncy. He found guys like that. Chris Taylor is another one. I believe he's at $500,000 a year. He finds guys like that. So he's willing to plug and play with everybody that's on the fringes. So, you know, while we had a great moment with Connor Joe getting his first hit and being able to score a run, you know, we're going to have to say goodbye to something like that, because chances are Connor Joe won't be good enough to make this roster as the season progresses.
Yeah.
Which falls under what I want to see this year's progress. And Zaidi, I'm fine with what he's doing. I really am. You don't build Rome in a day. You just don't. And with a manager who is giving some pushback, because I firmly believe that's why Pablo's on the roster.
I think so too.
I think there's push and pull, and I don't think it's bad push and pull. I actually think this shows how Zaidi is willing to be flexible and understand the needs of the players in the clubhouse, because he knows that that's not his realm.
Yeah.
So he understands, though, you know, and he gets that there's a human aspect to it. There's not just some guy crunching numbers up there. And that's what I think is cool about it. And he understands the approach. So, you know, that's why now they have a first baseman and an outfielder, Tyler Austin from the Twins, which, again, another trade with the Twins. That's where Reed came from. That kind of surprised me, too.
Yeah, it surprised me, too. That was pulled off this morning. And right when I saw the trade, I didn't know who was going to be let go to make room on the roster. But, I think anyone who knows anything could have guessed Connor Joe. And sure enough, when I got home and I could read more of the details, they said Connor Joe was DFA'd. So, and you know, he just had a nice little moment this weekend. He got a nice little blue pit, his first major league hit. He actually came around and scored and was a part of that rally, which put the Giants ahead. So he chose to get his first hit at a good time. Not that other times weren't good. With bases,
any of them
base runners
been
on.
Good, you know?
I know. You know, and the Giants took him and, the left-handed pitcher, I'm blanking out on his name right now, who got his first major league win in the same game.
Bergen.
Thank you, Bergen. And so they put them both in these laundry carts and rolled them into the showers and doused him with milk and sriracha and beer. And it was awesome. And the next day, Bergen, he was asked, by these kids at the Little League Day, you know, what's your favorite moment in professional baseball? And he said, when I got rolled in and doused. And I guess Kevin Pillar was also kind of taken aback by the camaraderie and the chemistry that he saw and how everybody kind of was keeping upbeat with Connor Joe and was like, you're going to get your hit. Don't worry. I know that Evan Longoria had told him, I started with the Giants 0-17. It'll come. I understand. You feel bad. You feel like you're letting everyone down, but stop pushing so hard. It'll come. Because he was 0-15 at the time. So it sounds like the chemistry and the clubhouse is doing fine. They just need to start getting those hits rolling. But I did feel, not that I think he should have stayed on the roster. It's just, you know, kind of that little sentimental attachment to Connor Joe. I kind of like him. Was rooting for him, pulling for him. But he might clear waivers. Mac Williamson did, I believe. Did Reed clear waivers, by the way?
Reed cleared waivers, but... they severed ties and then he re-signed a minor league deal because somehow it makes him more money.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, the Giants are flexible enough to do that.
Right.
And it's funny, back to the Pillar trade and Duggar moving. I actually think Duggar is smart enough by moving to know that he's going to learn from this guy, Pillar.
Oh, yeah.
And that even if he's the future center fielder of the Giants, it's okay if he shifts over to center field in a year and a half when Pilar's contract is done and they may now be keeping him after that time. I think Duggar is taking the long view, and I think the Giants are taking a long view. And that's part of the reason they traded for Pillar. I think the veteran, hearing him like the clubhouse like that and being a veteran means he'll be more apt to get in the middle of these kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure he'll make some friends on the ball club. And it's funny because he knew Bergen because Bergen was in the Jays organization and the Giants took him as a Rule 5 draft pick.
Right.
So it was funny when he was talking about, you know, seeing what they did with Berg, there was a familiarity with him. And I think that probably helps, because I remember that shot when he got to the dugout that first night at Dodger Stadium. Like, he didn't know who to stand next to. And finally, like, Eric Kratz came over and they knew each other from somewhere and they said hi to each other. It was funny. He was totally a fish out of water. But I think Pillar is going to fit right in with this team, because the Giants are not a bunch of bashers. They're a bunch of scratch it out, claw it out kind of guys, and that's what Pillar is.
Yeah. Well, let's look at Tyler Austin's career. He has roughly, what does he have? 244. Oh, that was last year. So last year, between the Yankees and the Twins, he hit 17 home runs in 244 at bats. So right away, you kind of go, hey, that's pretty damn good. It's better than most any Giant. Career, he's hit 232. He has 24 career home runs, 151 strikeouts. So he definitely sounds like he's got a couple holes in his swing. But again, 17 home runs last year between the two teams. That's nothing to shake a stick at. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what kind of power this guy can provide. But don't expect him to hit 300, and don't expect him to not strike out. But I think Zaidi knows that. He's getting what he's kind of bargaining for. But that's what the Giants, they need that occasional pop. If he's going to be a pinch hitter off the bench or a backup outfielder, he's going to face lefties, whatever. He's going to be needed in those situations where they're down by a couple runs and they put a couple runners on late in games, because you're looking for that pop. You're looking for that one swing that can tie a game or put you ahead, because the Giants can't continually just, you know, hope they scratch out all these two out hits. It's not going to happen very often.
Well, he also falls right in line with the versatility that we've seen from Zaidi.
Yeah.
He can play corner spots in the infield as well as corner spots in the outfield. So, like Solarte, he's looking for the versatility. And, I mean, Solarte's still the only backup shortstop. But, other than that, he seems to have every position covered with backups that can play more than one position. So, he falls right in line with every other Zaidi acquisition. And we'll see how long he lasts. They put room for him on the 25-man roster by DFA and Connor Joe, and I'm pretty sure he's going to hang around there, and it just might be somebody else a month from now. That's kind of what I'm coming to expect from the new Giants. That's how it feels. It feels like a new organization, so I'm just kind of rolling with it and seeing what happens.
I think it's going to be really interesting if we can remember to do this when we do our season wrap up and look at what the roster looks like at the end of the season versus opening day. I think it's going to be mind boggling how different it is.
Yeah. Reed and Joe are already off the roster from opening day. And
10 games in, right?
Right. You know, I mean, they did better. The Cubs have a pitcher that didn't even make it to their home opener. I mean, at least, did Reed make it? Reed didn't even make it to the home opener. He didn't even get a hit as a Giant. I mean, yeah. It was worse than Ugla.
Oh, God. Yeah, that was a bad time. That was a bad time.
Yeah.
But he got a ring.
Yeah, he did. He happened to get a ring out of it, even though he didn't get a hit. But apparently Reed struck out more than Ugla did. So there, or he had more at-bats without a hit, and therefore that's why he's the worst Giant ever. I'm sorry, Michael Reed.
Dan Ugla getting a ring for his 2 weeks with the Giants. That was awful. All right, let's move into who's hot and who's not. So I think you all can imagine the hot list is very short compared to the not list. So go ahead and read the two players that are on the hot list. You talked about him earlier, so go ahead.
Yeah, Brandon Belt is the one Giant getting it done over the past week. He's 7-for-24 with 3 bombs, and he's driven in 8 runs. And he had, 2 bombs at Dodger Stadium? And he hit one in their victory on Saturday. So as Belt goes, the team's going so far. And yeah, he's the only one hitting. And you talked about Bumgarner earlier, that his runs were unearned. So therefore, he's got a 1.3 ERA. And honestly, he's looked pretty sharp aside from that one inning he fell apart.
Yeah, yeah. He did say he didn't have much command in that start, even though he only allowed, one earned run or no earned runs over 5. He said he couldn't locate his fastball, and that's why he was walking guys left and right. So he is pitching tonight against the Padres. This will be his first home start, so hopefully he'll kind of regain that composure. But yeah, statistically, he's not doing so bad in his first 2 starts, but because of those unearned runs and because of the lack of the offense, he's 0-2 with a 1.38 ERA, which is, it's insane. It's just insane. You just, you don't see that very often.
He's the new Matt Cain.
We're gonna start saying, yeah, he got Bumgarnered or whatever today. So who's not? Kevin Pillar. Hey, look, we love the guy so far. He's sparked some life. His defense has saved some runs, and it's a small sample size, but he's starting out 2-for-16, but that's okay. We expect that to hopefully, you know, average out. Joe Panik, who had a fantastic spring hitting over 400, has started off very, very cold, hitting 192. Longo, he just really got tanked by the Tampa Bay series. He went 0-for-14 or whatever. So it dropped his average below the Mendoza line. He's hitting 194 now on the season, and they really need this guy. He's a corner guy. I mean, come on. He's a former All-Star. He needs to start hitting here at the beginning of the season. Posey and Parra each hitting 200, and it's interesting. Buster Posey is still considered one of the best catchers in the game, and he can still handle the pitchers and anything behind the dish and throw guys out. It's just his offense is really starting to wane over the last few years, not just the power, but we'll see. I mean, I fully expect him to still hit around 280 this year, make the All-Star team, but he hasn't. Let me just put it this way. Because he's coming off his hip surgery and everybody was hoping that he was going to be the Posey of old, which I didn't have any hopes for. He's not going to be the 2012 Posey. We know that. But could he be the Posey from 2014, where he was really good, but just not an All-Star or just not an MVP? I just was hoping for early signs of that kind of production, and it hasn't happened in the first 10 games. But well, we'll see if anything rolls around. But I know that yesterday when they slashed his lineup on the screen, besides his average, it said zero home runs and zero RBI. Zero RBI hitting in one of the power positions in the lineup. That's not good, man.
Well, I'm starting to wonder if I'm willing to give it a month. Coming off of the hip surgery, and so he's having to refine his swing without all the hitches and giddy-ups that he was using to compensate for a sore hip. So the fact that he drove the ball to the right field wall on Saturday was a very, very good sign coming from him. When he starts driving the ball the other way, usually that means he's coming around. That actually means he'll start pulling some home runs. But he still had to sit on Sunday because Posey is not he's caught back-to-back days twice. And he has not caught 3 days in a row yet this season. And so I think we need to give him a month to kind of see where he's at, and then maybe it's time to consider moving him out of a power position in the order. And I just wonder, you know, if that'd be hard for Bochy and Posey to tackle, or if Posey would be willing to do it. I mean, I don't know if moving him to the two slot because he still makes contact is worth it, or dropping him to like sixth maybe so that, you know, he can clean up after the cleanup guys. You know, that remains to be seen. But that Posey was struggling because he just didn't seem to have a swing yet. And I feel like we saw signs of life. So I want to give him a month, see where he's at before I really put a judgment on Posey. Because as we've said 1,000 times, I don't think this team is competing for a ring this year. So it's okay to just, you know, let things happen as they go over the course of a few months to see where they're at.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that if I were to move him without considering anything else, I do think number two is viable, and I think number six is viable. But there are reasons that's not going to happen. One is, I think you hit it, that Bochy and him have that relationship. It's Bochy's last year. He's not going to move his premier catcher to something that could be construed as a slap in the face. The other thing I would say is if Buster Posey was traded to, let's say, you know, the Houston Astros or the Dodgers or one of these power-hitting teams, he would not even be sniffing hitting 3, 4, or 5. He would absolutely be hitting 6 or 7 in the lineup. Well, the difference is the Giants don't have that kind of lineup. So you look at the entire lineup and yeah, you go, Belt's got 3 home runs. That's fine. Longo's a power hitter, quote unquote. He's struggling. And you got Posey and you got all these new guys. You got Crawford will never be a 4 hitter. You know, Panic is obviously not a 4 hitter. All these guys are not 4 hitters. So it's just kind of by default, even though he's struggling and his production has waned and he only had 5 home runs last year, he's still kind of the default cleanup guy. It's just the way it is. So I think that's just kind of where he's going to be all year. And if he does struggle this year to produce, especially with the power numbers, and we get a new regime in next year in terms of a manager, I do think you might start seeing changes in 2020, but not this year in terms of where he's hitting.
I just want to see him healthy. I like seeing him drive the ball.
I just want to see him healthy. Yeah, I really like the guy. Really pulling for him. Just want to see him hit. You know, yeah, it would be nice if he could turn around 15 balls this year. You know, because five was just kind of an embarrassment last year. I mean, Cody Bellinger already has more than that in 10 games in the season. So Derek Rodriguez, he struggled his last start, which was the home opener. But, you know, I'm going to chalk that one up to nerves because there were two outs and no one on. And then it was single or it was home run, double, double home run, four guys in a row. And he said his adrenaline was pumping and he couldn't really feel his fingertips. So that's fine. I'm going to chalk that up to nerves of the home opener. He proved himself last year. He looked great after that first inning. He settled down, no runs the next four or five innings. So I think he'll be fine, but he's rocking a 5.25 ERA because of that rough start. But again, early in the season, these numbers go up and down very, very quickly because of the small sample size. But that'll wrap up your who's not. Now, you've got a couple of new things that we're going to start bringing in. You got a minor league report?
I do. And the other thing I was going to bring in, I'm not because I am not as prepared as I wanted to be. So this year we're going to try to just keep a little eye on the minor leagues. And the minor league season's opened last week. So there's really nothing to report after four games. So I just want to give a quick run through of highlight somebody on each squad so far. As the season's gotten going, AAA Sacramento, they started off 3-1. So all the minor league teams have played four games, mm-hmm. and Sacramento started off 3-1 so far. And I believe it was I saw Vogt maybe hit a homer. Yeah, oh, Vogt's got two homers on the season already. So future backup catcher Stephen Vogt has two homers, and the Sacramento River Cats in AAA in the Pacific Coast League, they've started off 3-1. I don't have the specifics of who beat who at this point. Right. I'm going off the – all right. And Double A, Richmond, the Richmond Flying Squirrels of the Eastern League, they've started off the season 3-1 as well. And Jonah Arenado, Nolan Arenado's younger brother, has started off the season batting .375 with three hits in his first eight at-bats. And doesn't look like anybody's homered, but there's not as much – power in the Eastern League as there is, say, yeah, the ball carries out in the Pacific Coast League. It doesn't carry here back east. And then the Augusta Green Jackets, they're single A of the South Atlantic League. They're 2-2. That's the team that's 4 hours away from me. And there's nothing really to report on any of the there's no hot prospects that are in Augusta right now. There really aren't. So there's nobody I'm on there. And if there's somebody in Augusta you want to know about next week, let me know. And finally, San Jose, where Joey Bart is starting the season and Helio Ramos is starting the season. The team has come out to a 1-3 start, and Ramos is only hitting, where did it go, 0-91 so far. Bart so, did yeah, drive
one,
in a run.
1-11 probably or something like that.
Yeah, I think 12. And Joey Bart started off decently at an RBI hit in the first in the home opener. But he's 3-for-12 overall. He has a triple and no home runs yet. So San Jose, that's the one I want to keep an eye on with Joey Bart and Helio Ramos this year. You know, that seems to be the place to stash the high talent, high upside guys.
Yeah, in fact, you know, the park is 30 minutes from my house. And when I realized that Bart and Ramos were starting the season there, they're not probably not going to be there that long. You know, they're certainly not going to be there all season, I wouldn't imagine. So I want to get my butt up there. I want to go see them with my own eyes before they, you know, kind of move through AAA. Because, you know, typically with these prospects, the higher level prospects, they almost always start in San Jose and they almost always skip AA and go straight to the PCL. So I fully expect Bart and maybe Ramos to be up with Sacramento by the end of the year. And with Bart possibly even seeing him have a cup of coffee when the rosters expand. But then again, that'll screw up his eligibility and the timetable and all that. So perhaps not.
Well, Zaidi's the one that hinted at it. So yeah, I feel like the door's open, you know?
It is open. Oh, and by the way, we didn't talk about this last time. I'll just mention it now since we just talked about the rosters expanding. So what do you think about next year with the rosters are not going to expand like they are or they have in the past? I mean, I found that really interesting.
I don't mind it. I think that it's a good rule to increase competitiveness. It says to teams that you can't just use September as tryouts for next year.
Yeah.
You still have to try to put your best foot forward. And I like the roster expansion one. And 26-man roster, I believe, next year as well. Which I think, or at least they're considering it, because I think that's paving the way. And this, again, is a discussion for another day. I think it's paving the way for the DH. So there's a few.
I think so, too.
I have a lot of examples of why. I love that Bumgarner homered. I love that Greinke homered twice that day. I love that John Lester got a base hit to knock in the Cubs' first run of the season just now. But John Lester also just left the game because he ran the bases. I'm not even kidding. When he came home and slid, you could see a wince, and he just left the mound an inning and a half later. Yes.
Yeah. Lester.
Well, I mean, it's no offense to pitchers, but I mean, I know Lester's been in the NL for a while, but they're asked to do something that's, you know, not theirs. Anyway, so I like the idea of, that's been my thought, if they were ever going to bring the DH, expand the rosters to 26, because I think of guys like Flan, and they were fringe guys. Bochy was a fringe guy, and they might not have gotten their shot on a roster with a DH because they don't need the utility infielder as much. But because they do with the pitching and double switches, that's why somebody like Flan got a shot. But I think with the 26-man roster, it still keeps that built-in, you know, utility guy role as a roster spot. So I think that that helps that. And then, I mean, we didn't even talk about the three-batter minimum either.
No, that's another weird one. And that's purely aimed at speeding the game up. I get it. Well, yeah, I don't want to get into it because baseball is just something that I've always loved. I know I sound like an old curmudgeon when I say, you know, don't change it, tradition, blah, blah, blah. It's like, look, I know things change, new ballparks, baseballs are wound differently, bat technology, training technology, all these things, of course, are a part of the game. But I'm just talking about the fundamental rules of the game. I've always liked the sport because it was extremely similar, if not identical, to the way the game was 80 years ago, you know? They've had some big changes, though, in 73 with the DH. Hell, that's been around exactly as long as I've been alive. So it's not like there was no DH in my lifetime, right?
Right.
You know, I was born in November of that year, so that first season, while I was baking in the oven, it was the first year of the DH. You know, they lowered the mound in 1960, 68. Whatever it was. Yeah, 68. Because guys like Bob Gibson were too dominant. Things like that. So, yeah, there have been some big changes in the past. Playoff system, same thing. Wild card, the second wild card, all these things when teams used to just win their division and go straight to the World Series. Now it's much more of a gauntlet and a crapshoot to get there, which, by the way, makes the Giants' runs more impressive, by the way. And so, I don't know, I the whole three-batter minimum is weird, but again, it harkens back to, I guess you can use the reverse argument, and the fact is that starters just pitch complete games all the time. And if they didn't, it was one or two pitchers that came in and pitched like full innings. You know, it's not been until the last five or so years. You could say Tony La Russa was kind of starting it maybe 15 years ago, but the specialists, right, they come in, you get three pitchers in an inning in a tight game. But to me, it's just a baseball fan, and I know I'm not their general average baseball fan that they're trying to cater to with these changes. I don't mind it. I don't mind waiting an extra couple minutes for warm-ups and a TV break because I want to see sometimes these loogies come out and face the power hitter, you know, from the left side. I kind of like that stuff. But now it's going to be interesting when that rule becomes official. Is it next year or the year after, whatever it is? Because I know
I think it's next year. I think they're still, meaning that it's still in debate or they're going to test it somewhere.
And so it's just going to be interesting to see what managers are going to do when they're faced with a situation, because it's also potential to increase offensive production in the game and speed up the game. So I get the intent behind it, but I think it's going to lock teams into these weird situations where, okay, you look at your lineup and there's two lefties coming up and then a righty. Okay, you bring in your left-handed specialist, but you know they're probably going to pinch hit for the second left-hander anyway. Right. So here he comes in, but now he's got to pitch to three batters. So he maybe gets the first guy, and then suddenly there's a pinch hitter. It's a righty, and now he's facing two righties. It's like, well, okay, but you wouldn't have brought in the lefty to face two righties. It's odd to me. but he has to face two more guys.
The extra layer of strategy then that you have to decide. Well, wait a second. Should I bring in my lefty or should I just bring in a righty and force the other way? Which is why I don't hate it. I really don't, actually. I was shocked that I'm okay with it because I think it's just going to come up less than people think. I think that a lot of times pitchers are going to be brought in and they'll get out of the inning and then a new pitcher will take over the next inning because they're not going to force the outs to carry over, the batters to carry over, because you couldn't pinch hit for a pitcher that way. That changes the rule. And the fact that the use of loogies has been on the decline also seems in favor of that.
Sure.
And I mean, I was watching, it was one of the Padres-Giants games early in the season. I think it was the second game, and the Padres made like three pitching changes in an inning. And I'm sitting there, and I was getting bored. I was getting distracted. I was like, come on, you know, you come back for like two pitches, and then it's another commercial. And like, I can kind of see where the league's coming from in the sense that you know, they don't want to keep chopping up the game. Pace of play seems to be such an issue, and I don't think it's pace of play is like the issue. It's just timing itself. So, I mean, Philippe Alou was another one, man. In the Philippe days of the Giants, he would go out there and he'd use four pitchers in an inning to get four different guys out.
True.
You know, he was one of the forerunners with La Russa in that respect as well. So, I mean, I don't hate it. Is it necessary? I don't know, but I don't hate it. I think that we'll all adjust to it within 5 to 10 years anyways. I think we'll all adjust to all these rules, like all the ones you alluded to earlier. We adjusted to them over the years.
It'll definitely bring in a new strategic aspect of the game and got to think ahead both teams and who they're going to face. I guess that feeling I was referring to definitely relates more to the playoffs, kind of that higher intensity. But I agree, you know, games in April, I don't necessarily need to see three guys pitch in the ninth inning or the eighth inning, you know, in a tight jam, because that does slow down the pace of play. So I understand the motivation behind it. I just think it's going to have some interesting repercussions. But because we kind of see the writing on the wall with the DH coming in maybe 3 years to the NL, it will kind of alleviate the problem of now that a guy has to pitch to three batters and maybe, I don't know if the pitcher is going to come up in that situation, but now it's going to reduce double switches, obviously, with the pitcher. But now you might see double switches more so not for the pitcher, but to combat that lefty coming in, and you got three lefties in a row, now you pinch hit twice or do two double switches or one double switch in that three. So instead of pitcher double switches, now you have, you know, one-sided batter double switches. So
it's right, So it's interesting. It's just a different layer of strategy. You just got to adjust your thinking, you know. I mean, the two-point play wasn't in the NFL until the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And I'm sure most people couldn't imagine it without it now. But you just add the new layer strategy, and that's what it is. And, I mean, it is what it is, you know. We have to accept it anyway.
Yep,
so
it's where they're going. So it's not like I'm going to stop watching the game because of a few new rules. I just think they're weird, but that's okay. All right, so coming up this week, we're going to have three against the Padres at home and then four against the Rockies at home. So tonight's going to be Madison Bumgarner. And, you know, the Padres are a good team. The Rockies looking like, you know, kind of maybe average mediocre right now. We'll see. They did make the playoffs last year, if you guys forgot. So, again, still could be two very rough series coming into Oracle. But at 3-7, Eric, I mean, every team goes through these 10-game spurts. By the way, you know, I wouldn't be upset if the 49ers lost one game. But that's the way you have to kind of look at this 10-game section. It's one game of a football season, right? 162 games, 10 represents 1 out of 16. So it's kind of like, all right, they've started 0-1. Let's regroup. Let's see what they can do next week. But this is definitely not a time where you want to pull another 3-7 over the next 10, because you're going to get yourself so buried. I mean, so buried. You don't want to start off the season 6-14 or 5-15 or some BS like that, because it's just going to spiral out of control, I have a feeling. Maybe not as bad as the Orioles of last year, but they got to avoid kind of a tailspin early.
I think the players in the clubhouse are realizing, or they need to realize, that if they don't get it together over the first couple months and at least have a little better record than 3 out of every 10, that Zaidi's going to start trading people.
Oh, yeah.
And that if they want Right. So if they want to stay together, they need to win ball games. And I mean, the San Diego series, they're facing the same three lefties they faced to start the season. So familiarity is on their side when it comes to that. And then Colorado, Colorado faced Tampa and the Dodgers, just like the Giants have so far this season. And the Giants fared better against both those teams than the Rockies did. The Rockies have only managed to really beat up on the Marlins. So, you know, the Rockies don't know who they are right now, which could be a benefit to the Giants. So they could put together – I could see them putting together a 4-3 week if they put some, you know, good games together. But they're going to need to hit the ball, and they're going to need to hit lefties, which – so far, they haven't really shown that they've been able to do and score before the fourth inning.
Yeah, no, put a couple runs, especially tonight. You know, boost. My bum doesn't care, but you know, just kind of boost up the crowd, get the crowd into it, get a nice, you know, 2-3 run lead early in the game, and then just see if they can cruise. It's going to be a tight game. I mean, we have to expect 9 out of 10 games are going to be tight now with this team, because they have good pitching and they have pathetic offense. So
I appreciate that as a fan. I gotta be honest, every game has been engaging. Yesterday was really the only game where I felt like, I'm not sure that they can put together a rally, but generally I've been engaged, and that's all I'm looking for, is to be entertained this season, and I think we will.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah, I am so far. I tell you what, it's a lot better than watching the Cubs.
You must be shrooming.
They're so bad. Like, if you put the Cubs offense with the Giants pitching staff, you'd have the greatest team in baseball.
Oh, there you go. So bad. All right. As we wrap up, we got one more little section. I like this. Eric's adding it. It's This Week in Giants History. Take it away.
Wednesday I will be releasing this week's in Giants history. Last week, if you missed it, you can go to the probably right underneath this post if you're on the website. You can go to the website, and last week I covered the 2010 opener and Tim Lincecum dominating. This week I'm looking back to 2012, when the Giants started the season 0-3 after getting swept in Arizona. They went to Colorado, and Barry Zito of all freaking people, throws a shutout in Colorado to get the Giants' first win of 2012. So I'm going to take a look back at that this week, Wednesday morning. It'll be dropping This Week in Giants History.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to episode 160 of the TortureCast. You can follow us collectively at TortureCast or individually at 2OutHits. That's with the number 2 for Eric, and at ChadK21 for myself. You can also like us on Facebook. And we have been extremely active. Eric really kind of led that off with his countdown to the season, which was awesome. We've gotten so much engagement from that. People seem to really like that little bit. Eric's published a couple of articles, and of course we're posting more of these little paragraph wrap-ups for each game and posting them there. So we seem to be getting a lot of engagement from that. So I think we're going to continue with that. So definitely like us on Facebook. And then of course, all of the articles and these episodes and podcast episodes are posted on our website too at torturecast.com. So you got anything else to sell or pimp or highlight, Eric?
No, not at all. I'm just, like I started the show with, I'll end it. I'm happy baseball is a part of everyday life again. It's nice to be in the rhythm of doing this again.
Yeah, it feels right whenever this time of the year rolls around. It just feels like, okay, this is the way life is supposed to be. So it's not all this weird hockey and football going on, even though I'd like to watch some of that, but all right, well, that'll do it for episode 160. Join us next week for episode 161. Until then, a boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills, saying we'll see you next time.